The second reading this morning is from John's Gospel, but continues the telling of the story of Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. And this talks about after the people have been singing praise and Jesus has ridden into town, the disciples trying to understand what all is going on with this. This is John chapter 12, beginning with verse 16. Jesus' disciples did not understand these things at first, but when Jesus was glorified, then they remembered that these things had been written of him and had been done to him. So the crowd that had been with him when he called Lazarus out of the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to testify. It was also because they had heard that he had performed this sign that the crowd went to meet him. The Pharisees then said to one another, "You see, you can do nothing. Look, the world has gone after him." The story of Palm Sunday is the story of paradox, of two different simultaneous realities. The first paradox is the one that came out in Matthew's gospel and is exemplified by these lovely animals up here. This ambiguous and somewhat confusing language about just what creature it is that Jesus rode into Jerusalem on. Was it a donkey? Was it a colt, i.e. a horse? If he was the king, he should be riding in on a horse. The son of David means that he's coming as the king, as the new Messiah. If he's the servant, the suffering servant from Isaiah, then he should be riding in on a donkey. If he's powerful, he should be riding in on a horse. If he's powerless, he should be riding in on a donkey. So which one was he riding in this story? And the answer is both, actually, two different simultaneous realities of his kingship and his servanthood, of his power and his weakness. The second paradox is that Palm Sunday itself is two things at once. In the liturgical year, the church year of celebration of the life and story of Jesus, Palm Sunday is often also called Passion Sunday. It's the beginning of the week in which Jesus will suffer. So it's called Passion Sunday to lead us into this time. There's Palm Sunday, which is the day of the triumphal entry with the hosannas and the celebration and the messianic affirmation from the crowd. But it's also Passion Sunday, the beginning of Jesus' final confrontation with the human realities of betrayal, abandonment, and mortality. So this Sunday is both. And we, as worshipers, inhabit those opposing realities in this one hour. We affirm Jesus as the triumphant Messiah claiming his throne, even as we anticipate his sorrow and death, knowing that, yes, he will wear a crown, but it will be made of thorns. Palm Sunday is a day of both joy and sorrow, existing simultaneously in some sort of dynamic tension with each other. The joy of Jesus claiming his rightful place in the cosmos is always tinged with the sadness of his suffering. And the sorrow of his crucifixion is always tempered and given light in the future by the joy of resurrection. During this whole season of Lent, we've been talking about one life, how Jesus' life as a human being sheds light on our own human experience. And if there is one thing we can affirm about human life, it is that joy and sorrow exist simultaneously. It's hard work being a person. There's lots of sorrow and struggle in people's lives these days. You have all seen it, and many of you have experienced it. Illness, anxiety, grief. But even in the midst of these sorrows and these struggles, we also see people revealing amazing strength and wisdom and empathy and compassion through those experiences of illness and anxiety and grief. People still show a willingness to learn and to change and to grow, even facing the limit of life. My sister-in-law, Amy, I have talked with you about her before, how last September, completely unexpectedly, she found that she had cancer and was into the intensive care facility for the next several months. Her husband, Jerry, Chandler's brother, was living and working in Tokyo, and Amy was living and working in Washington, D.C. when this happened. And so Jerry came, left his job in Tokyo, and came back to D.C. To help care for Amy and get her through this crisis. He was in the process right then of moving to Long Island, where his next job was going to be. So at least they were going to be in the same time zone, if not within shouting distance of each other upstairs and down in their townhouse in D.C. She has come through that experience amazingly well. She finally was able to talk again, was able to walk again, was able to move home, able to make it upstairs to their room, able to write to us and keep in touch with us on various electronic modes of communication. And we just received an email from her the other day. She's been serving as the executive director of this amazing agency called Population Action International. It's a group that works advocating for women's reproductive rights throughout the world, PAI, Population Action International. So this is the latest note from Amy. I wanted to write you with a decision I've been wrestling with but have finally made. I'm leaving my position at PAI. As you know, I am doing very well and feeling stronger each week, and I will be done with chemo mid-April and back to full power by summer. It turns out that I'm like many people who go through life-threatening experiences. This fight with cancer has changed my perspective and priorities on how I want to live my daily life. The biggest change for me is wanting to live in the same house as Jerry. The 3 years that he lived in Tokyo were extremely difficult, and after what has gone on with me the last 6 months has made us realize that we want to be together for the simple things in life, dinner together at the end of the day, talking in person instead of Skype about daily triumphs and tribulations. And then she goes on to say, if anyone knows of a good job in Long Island, to let her know. And if anyone knows of a great executive director for PAI with a passion for justice for women and great administrative skills, able to communicate with village women in Africa and with senators on Capitol Hill, to be in touch with her. But the point is that that brush with mortality, not just a brush with mortality, that facing directly her own mortality helped her to clarify her priorities, as it does for so many people. That the lesson of the human mortality for us all is that underneath the pain, facing life's limits reminds us of the reality of love, and the reminder to value that love and to appreciate each other, not to miss those opportunities to express our love for each other whenever we can. Those lessons frequently come out of the experience of suffering and loss. Okay, so now I want to say something. Here at the beginning of Holy Week, as Jesus heads for the cross, here's something that I want to say. First of all, I do believe that the fact that we are mortal, that we die, can help us to appreciate the fact that we are alive. I do believe that the fact that we lose people we love can help us to appreciate each other more while we are together in this life. But, point number two, I do not believe that God gives us sorrow and suffering so that we will somehow be more compassionate and empathetic, be more noble or more appreciative of the gift of life. I do not believe that God gives us sorrow and suffering in order for us to learn these lessons. And that's the problem with the cross. The common understanding of the crucifixion of Jesus is that we human beings were so bad, so sinful, so irredeemable, that the only sacrifice huge enough to expiate all that guilt was the sacrifice of God's own guiltless Son. That Jesus redeemed us, paid some debt, some ransom to God, by enduring suffering that he did not deserve. Here's the problem with that. It makes God into an abusive father and makes suffering look like a good and redemptive thing. I've just been reading this book, Proverbs of Ashes, which is a feminist understanding of the atonement. And one of the authors of that book is a Methodist minister who was working in a small town outside Seattle. And part of her work was with abused women. And over again, she would hear the story. People would come to see her and said, I went to my priest and I told him that my husband was beating me and what should I do? And my priest said, it's your job to keep your family together. And what I am advising you to do is to endure the beatings and let your suffering draw you closer to Jesus. No, 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 no. Run for your life and your children's lives. We are not redeemed by suffering. We are not redeemed by Jesus' suffering or our own. To me, the message of the cross is this. The powers of the world use our fear of our own mortality to keep us under control. They use our fear of our own death to keep us under control. Snipers on the rooftops in Iran during the pro-democracy demonstrations. They use our fear of our own death to keep us under the control. Jesus knew what would happen to him if he kept challenging those powers, and he did. And if he kept refusing to return anyone evil for evil, if he refused to use force and violence to combat force and violence, he knew what would happen. At the beginning of Lent, we heard the story of the temptations of Jesus, where he was fasting in the wilderness, and the devil came and said, well, if you're hungry, turn the stones to bread. And he said, man does not live by bread alone. Well then, if you want power in the world, I'm the one who controls all the power in the nations, so just bow down and worship me, and you can have all the power in the world. And Jesus says, you're only actually supposed to worship God. Okay, so how about this? Takes Jesus up on the pinnacle of the temple and says, show that God keeps God's promises. Throw yourself off the pinnacle of the temple. God has promised that the angels will bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. So show that God is faithful. And Jesus says, actually, you're not supposed to test God. And then at the end of that story, it says, so the devil went away from him until an opportune time. Holy Week is the opportune time when the devil comes back into the story. The assumption is that Jesus didn't really have to die. Here he is, the Son of God. He could have called those angels that he didn't call on when he was up on the temple, could have summoned an army of the heavenly host to come and do some smiting, to smite King Herod and to smite Pontius Pilate and to smite the Roman soldiers and then to sweep him off to safety and his heavenly throne. But he did not choose that route. He followed the path of challenging the powers and principalities all the way to the end. And his death on the cross exposes the impotence and cruelty of worldly power. That such power ultimately has no moral legitimacy to stand on, has no love, has no beauty, has no exaltation of the human mind or the human spirit. It finally has only the threat of death to back up its claims of legitimacy. It's just like the Dalai Lama said in the film that we saw here a month or so ago, that when people are weak and fearful, they pick up a gun, not when they are powerful. God did not require Jesus' death. The powers of the world required Jesus' death. And in the resurrection, God vindicates the power of love over death, the power of love under death, The power of love that flows through human life connects us with the divine in a way that is never shaken, even by suffering and death. O grave, where is thy victory? O death, where is thy sting? That's why the cross is empty in a Presbyterian church. That all of the power in the world could not keep him hanging there. And it's empty there every week when we come here to worship to say that our task now, as followers of the risen Christ, is to make sure that no one else ever has to hang there. We live in a world of sorrow and love. This is the great paradox. It is because we love that we grieve. It is because life is so sweet that we are able to face the bitterness. It is because we believe in the ultimate power of life that we can challenge the forces of fear and death, returning no one evil for evil, but having courage and holding on to what is good. Amen.